From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of November, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will join us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest and South America. And if you can stay with us for the full hour, you'll hear all of Commodity Week. If not, you'll hear it on many of these radio stations over the weekend, or you can listen to it on our website at willag.org, willag.org, or in one of those podcast applications like Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or even Spotify. Just search out Commodity Week. You can search out the Closing Market Report for that matter. Our guests this week for Commodity Week, by the way, included Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing, and John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today settled at $5.53. That was down 6.25 cents. The March at 5.62 1/4, 5.5 lower, and the May contract down 5.25 at $5.67 1/4. January soybeans 12.05 1/2, 17.25 lower. The March at $12.17 1/2, down 16.75. In November of next year, 12 cents lower at $12.10 1/2. The bean meal down $3.10. Bean oil 80 cents lower for the day. Soft red winter wheat down 7.25, settled at 7.66 1/2, and the hard red at 7.78 3/4, down 7.25, both of those in the December contract for the day. Live cattle futures at $131.80, $1.17 1/2 higher. Feeders at $159.60, up $1.42 1/2, and lean hogs at $76.55, down $1.32 1/2. Crude oil for the day at $81.47 a barrel, up $2.67, and gasoline 4 cents higher at $2.33 3/10 of a cent for the afternoon. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss the commodity markets and what's been happening for the week. An interesting week, particularly for the soybean market. Things seem to be turning there. Can you tell me your impression of how things are going for soybeans across the planet?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to talk about the market first, then the agronomy side of it, Todd, it's kind of the same situation where we had macro tailwinds in this market, energy-led, currency-led tailwinds a week ago, and it seemed interesting ahead of the Federal Reserve getting ready to talk this week to me, and I didn't feel a lot of confidence in the soybeans to the upside. That I felt as though ever since the October crop report that it was either going to be the corn and wheat pulling beans higher or the soybeans pulling the corn and wheat lower, or at least, you know, dragging them down if we didn't have some support in the outside markets or weather support. Now, this takes us to the weather side of the equation. The stories have been increasing from South America about how things have improved, and they have in Argentina and in several areas of Brazil that were having difficulty. And right before you and I went on the air, I saw a newswire bleep that said that the South Americans, Brazil specifically, are going to have a lot of beans ready in January, as early as their crop's going to be ready. And now I think you're getting ahead of your skis a bit at this stage, because between the four major provinces or states in Brazil that I'm tracking that have issues still, you're talking about 35% of the production in soybeans, and probably a little bit over that in the corn. So I think that what happened this week was we lost our macro tailwinds. They became headwinds with a new 2021 high in the dollar. Natural gas decided to take a breather. Oats and spring wheat decided to see some longs take profit after the skyrocketing prices. So you lost your protein tailwind as well. And then I think the trade started talking about the South American weather. And then finally coming in at the end of the week, talking about how big the Brazilian crop could be ahead of Tuesday's report. So all of a sudden on the radar screen, come Thursday, come Friday, we started to think more about this report right around the corner.
So before we get to the report, it sounds as if you're telling me this is a pause, a retracement, taking profits in the marketplace, but potentially not a turn to the downside.
Yeah, I think you read the tea leaves perfectly there, because I believe that the fundamentals of this market are still in a inflationary bias from a standpoint of the dollar. I think should be making a high here based upon several fundamentals, not least of all the issue with the Federal Reserve and them keeping the word transitory in their rhetoric, and that allowing the inflationary pressures to continue. And the bond market picked up on that. The gold market picked up on that. It's just the dollar did not pick up on that. So I feel like the inflation bull still has room to run in the currencies, especially if you look at our trade balance. We have way too high a price of a dollar because our imports are just way too high right now compared to exports. And then what OPEC did for a second time to the Biden administration when we requested a higher production increase than 400,000 barrels a day of crude oil. OPEC said, no, we're not going to do it. So now I think the crude oil and the energy sector as a whole has a supportive feature underneath it here in the market. And so to kind of cap off what your question entails is that I think the dollar is trying to make a high here. I'll know more about that next week. And I did notice here in Atchison on the spot corn price, we've gone from a 28 under spot bid to a 14 plus spot bid in the last 4 weeks. So the cash market's doing what I was hoping it would do. It's going to support us, I think, into 2022. And the futures is going to play the fund and investor and inflation game.
So what do producers do with old crop or crop that they just harvested or in the process of harvesting corn and soybeans?
Yeah, the beans probably could have done a little bit more on my end as far as letting a little bit more go. I'm at 75% sold, did another swath this week earlier in the week with another 10, 15% increment in 21. Haven't started 22, had an open order in and 22 beans, got about 5 or 6 cents from it when we made our highs. So I would say I'm going to hold pat since we're so close to the October lows of 1184 and a half, see if those lows hold after the crop report comes out, see if this weather and the harvest comes into the United States and we delay our harvests again here in the central and eastern corn belt. But for corn and beans and wheat, I really think I'd stand by what I just said about the dollar and about the cash market. Be in the put market here at this point if you're really nervous about a pullback, so that A, you can time it out, B, you can leave your basis open, and C, you can have a scenario where if the inflation really is as significant as it could be in early 2022, you don't need to really be pulling a lot of cash levers here.
So essentially, let me see if I can recap this. You're thinking a weather market that had started has waned, but you're not convinced that's really the case yet. And there are places that you're still watching for soybeans, particularly in South America, and that the fundamentals from the macro side are still telling you there's a lift left in the marketplace.
Exactly right. And just to cap off, you need help me need to fill in a blank on the South American crop size. We've got Safrinha Mercado as of Friday at 144.7, USDA's at 144 in October, and last year we did 137. We got plenty of a bigger bean crop being traded, I think, in the prices here. So the big question for me on Tuesday's report is, what does the demand look like? If I'm going to lose my 1184 and a half low from last month, I'm going to bet it's because USDA really cuts the demand side of the equation. And that's what I'll be watching most for.
All right. Anything from the livestock sector today?
Yeah, we saw the bids and offers come together at the end of the week for the cattle and went to 130 out here in the Southern Plains. I'd be looking really hard at letting some cattle marketings go here in the early part of next week. I think we're plenty rich in that fat cattle market and getting close in the feeders as well. We've got some gaps below this market on the continuation charts. I think they're meaningful, especially if the corn picks it up again after the report.
You have a good weekend.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me, too.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Zuzalo. He is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. You know, the Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, and I'd like to give some thanks out at the moment. Thank you to the station, WILL, for being supportive of the ag programming here on IPM, along with you, our listeners, for listening to the program. I know some of you say, I don't quite understand what you say all the time, but thank you for being here. And I really like to listen to the programs, even if there's some language that goes over my head. And for the rest of you, the farmer and agricultural listeners, I hope that we do a good job for you as well. Now, if there's anything, and I mean anything, that you'd like to make comment on, you can do that on our website. Just send me an email directly, in fact. My address is right there on the website at willag.org. The phone number is there as well. I do answer that one, and I answer it kind of around the clock, so be careful about when you call, but I'd be glad to talk to you. And I don't mind if you call in the evening, that's fine too, but I sure do appreciate everything that each and every one of you do for WILL and the agricultural community across the state, Indiana, and the nation. Up next, a little something about cybersecurity that was provided to us by the NAFB, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, and Joe Gill at KASM in Albany, Minnesota. That's about halfway between Fargo and St. Paul. He writes that disruption is nothing new to the agricultural industry and that farmers and ranchers are accustomed to dealing with flooding, drought, fluctuating commodity prices, of course, but that the latest threat to the ag and food industry is of a bit of a different variety in the form of cyber attacks. Minnesota-based AgriGrowth, that's a nonprofit, nonpartisan member organization that represents the agriculture and food industry, recently held their 2021 Minnesota Ag and Food Summit in Minneapolis, and they discuss concerns over cybersecurity. I thought you'd like to hear some of that. Noah Korba, the director of cybersecurity at General Mills, talked about what makes the food and ag industry vulnerable to such attacks.
You know, we've got a lot of different types of operational technologies. We talked about they just weren't ever built to withstand cyber attacks. And that makes it kind of hard for us to, you know, devise ways to protect those.
Now, Korba says, like many industries, the cybersecurity industry is lacking in overall employment and does not meet the needs of the cybersecurity sector today.
You know, there's a lot of numbers that get thrown around. I'm not going to quote any of them because it's hard to know, like, exactly how bad the problem is. But, you know, I can confidently say we've got way more job openings in cybersecurity than there are people that can fill it right now. And then that puts us in a you know, pretty bad position of, you know, we've got a lot of things to do and we don't have enough people to do it. I know that probably sounds familiar, as in many other organizations and many other fields as well.
Chris Gabbert, who's a cybersecurity advisor with the United States Department of Homeland Security, talked about today's information environment and why these attacks are becoming more frequent.
Everything is just expanding, and there's more devices going in everywhere. And the more devices you add, the more complex your network's going to get, and the more complex your ecosystem's going to get. So the inventory of devices makes it that much harder. If you don't know what's out there, if somebody just connects to your wireless network, or somebody takes something and plugs it into your network, now you're at another exposure.
When it comes to cybersecurity, some say the weakest link can lie within the employees of an ag or food company. But Jim O'Connor, Chief Information Security Officer with Cargill, says that employees can be your biggest asset and best first line of defense.
I always think about when I hear, you know, people are the weakest link. They can be, but they can also be your strongest ally. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about your training, your awareness of really making it meaningful to people, when we, you know, we do the phishing test as well, and hey, if you click the wrong way, you get that immediate feedback to help you understand what happened, and then, you know, what you can do about it in the future. But you know, the people that are using the technology, they are interacting with email, they're interacting on the internet, which are, you know, two of our biggest areas where, you know, threats will come in.
That was Jim O'Connor. He's Cargill's Chief Information Security Officer. Our thanks go to Joe Gill from KASM in Albany, Minnesota, for bringing us this cybersecurity issue from the 2021 Minnesota Ag and Food Summit. It's Friday. I hope you're having a great day. Part of that is just the weather's been magnificent across a lot of the Corn Belt. And Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible is responsible for it all. Hi, Eric. How are you today?
I will take all the credit. Thank you.
Well, how many more days do we get of just fantastic weather?
Yeah, I really hope that we all get to take advantage of the weekend and early next week. So we've probably got, including Friday, you know, I guess 5 more days of this. And so temperature's going to keep going up, which is going to be nice. So we're going to be seeing, you know, temperatures climbing into the 60s. So any, you know, harvest that needs to still get finished up, there'll be good weather for that. Plus, we've had several days to dry down, which is hopefully helping out with the soil conditions. But then, you know, we start to see those chances of keeping the nice weather around dwindle as we get into next week. So I'll take credit for the next 5 days and then pass it off to somebody else once we get into next week.
Well, we'll search for some other meteorologist to do that for. However, you're going to have to give us the bad news. What does it look like for the next week?
Well, I'm watching a weaker system that may come through on Tuesday. So we've got a lead, what we call shortwave, that's going to cut out. And it might kick off a low in Iowa that brings some scattered showers into our area. But it's the system that follows that I think has got most of our attention. And, you know, right now, even though the seed, the beginning of that system is still sitting in the North Pacific, almost in the Arctic. The models have been pretty consistent about sweeping this trough right through the West Coast once we get out to next Wednesday, takes it over the mountains onto Thursday, possibly just digs a deep, you know, deep low right over the Northern Plains. Now, we're going to be on the eastern and southern side of this, meaning that we're going to be in position to get mostly rain out of this event. But should it unfold the way that some of the models forecast, you know, today on Friday, it could look as though it brings snow to the Western Corn Belt. I mean, maybe a lot. We don't ever, you know, put much stock into the first big snowfall of the year in the plains when the models start picking up on it. But it'll be cold air behind it. And what's going to fuel it is all the beautiful weather we've got leading up to that point. So this rise in temperatures, we're going to bring the moisture up a little bit too. And that's going to be the source of energy that this system's going to tap into and transform into a possibly pretty strong low pressure system. And then it gets cold after that. So we'll be on a roller coaster ride for a while here in terms of our temperatures.
No, the classic, we're going to pay for this later, I guess.
Yeah, it feels that way.
Yeah. Well, what does the rest of the month of November? So you got us through about the first half of it. What's the second half of November look like?
Yeah, so it even though we don't have a really deep reservoir of cold air over like the Hudson Bay or the Canadian Prairie, in fact, sea ice and snow coverage is, you know, slightly below average. And all that means is if we had those values above average, we'd be able to tap into cold air that could stick around. So what it seems like is going to happen through November and even into early December is we'll get shots at cold air that'll come through. They won't be true Arctic air, but they'll be cold. And the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 days, and we'll moderate. It's going to be an open kind of transitory pattern because we've got a lot of momentum built up in the jet stream in the North Pacific, which keeps things moving. It's unblocked. And we've got, you know, nothing really that's going to shut it down over the North Atlantic. So I think we're going to see, you know, pretty volatile up, down, all the way through probably about December 15th.
It is that time of year, same time of year, but flipped in seasons for South America. How are things going there?
Well, things are going okay now. And when you look across the whole of South America's growing region, the only places that are showing up with some soil moisture deficits are in large areas are going to be in parts of Argentina. Now, over the next 10 days, we're going to be seeing dry conditions from Mato Grosso do Sul through Paraná through Rio Grande do Sul. That's Brazil's southern growing regions. Whereas from Mato Grosso over to like Goiás, Tocantins, Minas Gerais, those areas might have a surplus of 3 to 4 inches of rain through the next 10 days. So super wet north and dry south. When we'll start to see a weather story developing for South America is if the models are correct in that possibly through December and into January, we see way more dry days in southern Brazil than wet days. And if that's the case, that's consistent with the La Nina that's continuing to develop, and it could start to peel back the potential on yield there if that drought really manifests itself. But at this point, through January 2022, I'm not overly concerned about Brazil's northern and eastern growing areas.
Anything else across the planet we should be watching?
Yeah, I think biggest thing is just going to be this La Nina. I think it's going to possibly peak in mid-January. If it fades quickly after that through spring, we may make a transition to an El Nino a week El Nino summer. And I think that's going to be on most people's minds, considering what that could do to potential yields around here, because most farmers in Illinois, we like El Nino summers.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org.